Sister Pauline Quinn is a simple servant at the Dominican Order. In 1981, she started the first prison dog trainer program in the country in Washington State. And since then, she's helped start prison dog programs all over this country and beyond this country. She ran away from home when she was 12 years old. She had been tortured as a child to the point where she couldn't speak. She lived on the streets, and then she lived in institutions. She encountered a dog given to her by friends at some point along the way and discovered the healing power of animals and humans. The work she's done is truly extraordinary. She also has helped refugees fleeing Africa, people who were wounded in the Bosnian War, disabled children struggling to put on gas masks during the Gulf War. She believes prisoners who learn to train dogs for pets or people with disabilities will change when they become other-centered, which helps them find meaning in their own pain. She's with us this hour to talk about her remarkable work, and we'll be welcoming phone calls for her, as we always do. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show, and we should also say that she has started programs at Oshkosh Correctional Facility, and there's also a program in Green Bay, so she is has a strong presence here in our state as well. Sister Pauline Quinn, hello. Thanks very much for being with us.
Well, thank you, Kathleen. Thank you very much for having me on your show.
Our pleasure. Believe me, our pleasure. You came highly recommended from a woman who's been a very good friend of Wisconsin Public Radio for a long time, and she has met you. She saw a film about you some years ago and said, you just have to have her on the show. She's met you. And
she's a wonderful person.
Yeah, she is, and she says you are as well. Tell me, if you don't mind, about your early life, because it could be said that maybe you wouldn't be doing what you're doing now if your early life hadn't been as horrendous as it was, and you met a dog along the way.
Well, a dog came in my life later on down the road, but a lot of children don't have a voice. They have a voice more so now than they did back in the 1950s. But I was abused by neighbors, and we were having a dysfunction in the home. My father left, and my mother was trying to raise my brother and I, and it was a difficult task for her, and she was having a hard time. And there was nobody for me to speak to, so I would continually run away from the trauma that was around me. And people didn't understand anything about post-traumatic stress disorder those days.
You were hurt? Were you physically hurt growing up?
I was physically hurt growing up. Yes, I was.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of people are, and so there's a lot of people that have the same experiences that I have had, but I was a very sensitive person, and I couldn't deal with the trauma that was happening all around me, and I had no out. And so running away from home was a way to escape that trauma briefly, but I was running to nowhere, so that it didn't work. I didn't want to be out there alone. I wanted to be in a safe environment, but that wasn't possible because people didn't understand what I was going through.
Mm-hmm. I understand you were only 12 years old when you did this and were essentially homeless and beaten to the point where you couldn't even speak. You couldn't.
But that happened more in the institutions.
I see.
I was homeless after that part. I went to the institutions first. And back in the 1950s, it was a horrendous places of warehousing people here in California. And so it was just really difficult to cope in situations like when you're trapped like that. So what happens is that you just go within yourself and you don't speak because it's just you try to handle the pain as best you can.
Mm-hmm. And at what point did you become a Dominican?
Well, that was a long, long process. But when I was in the institutions, I told God that if he helped me change my life, I'd go out and help his people. And I did that even though I wasn't very close to God at that time. I didn't have any connections except a lot of people turn to God when they're in desperate situations and they have no alternatives. So it was at that time that the seed was planted when I gave this promise. And then eventually just things happened that moved me toward that direction. Even when I was homeless and didn't have any direction at that time, I still knew I wanted to go out and help people because I saw in my childhood all these abandoned warehouse people that nobody wanted, and mm-hmm. I didn't want people to forget them.
Mm. And how did you find, what was the path to starting the first prison dog training program in the U.S.? How did you get there, considering what your path had been?
Well, it was a long journey, but I'll skip towards that part of my life. And a dog named Joni came into my life, and she was a German Shepherd. And I call the German Shepherds image dogs because when people look at them, they're more respectful around them than it would be a cute little fluffy poodle dog. So Joni had a presence about her that helped me be able to have, if I walked down the street with her, people would look and have a little bit more respect. And when children are abused, they lose their self-respect and they lose their self-image. They have no self-esteem. So Joni was able to help me repair that because I felt safe with her. Nobody was going to hurt me with this dog.
Mm-hmm.
And it was so interesting because I said, if she gave me power like this, I'm going to get another dog. And so I got another Shepherd, and I could walk down the street and people would cross the other side because, you know, two German Shepherds going down the street is a little bit more scary. So it was really the dog to help heal me and to repair my self-esteem to the point that I could go out and start doing some things for other people.
Mm. And did you train them? Did you learn about training dogs?
Learn about training, but I didn't have money, so I would just go watch classes. Mm. And then I trained at home. And then I would train. I would go to the library and seek books on training. And so basically that's how I learned the concept of training. But in order to be a good trainer, you have to have practice. And somebody to be watching you and to tell you when you're not doing the proper things so you can have better guidance.
Right. And isn't it amazing what those two dogs, the path that they led you on, because now you're working with people all over the world with animals and really changing their lives and then more and more lives because the dogs are going out and helping people with post-traumatic stress or people who have seizures. I mean, or have disabilities. So you're helping the prisoner and you're also helping the dog to help other people and helping them get jobs too. I mean, it goes on and on, doesn't it?
It was back in the 1970s that when the service dog started to come into light, where people started to understand about these dogs, that I got involved, and I wanted to have the ability to use the inmates or anybody else in mental health to train dogs that would help their lives as well as others, but mental health wasn't interested, so I went to Dr. Leo Bustead, the dean of the Veterinarian College in Washington State, and Dr. Bustead backed me because I had no work experience, and so it would be hard for me to present that I was a professional.
Mm-hmm.
But with the film that Dr. Bustead did on the dogs that I trained, we gave a presentation to the warden at the Washington State Correctional Center for Women, And she became interested in doing a pilot program for 3 months to see how that works. And I found two very good trainers that were willing to come in. And the trainers really are the backbone of the program because they work directly with the inmates.
And so you did all of this. This is pretty amazing. Somebody was guiding. You did all of this with really not any training, just a vision. You had a great vision.
Just a vision. Vision and determination. And to keep a promise I made. And that's the hardest part, to keep, because it's really difficult to get into a prison, to start a program like this. I mean, in Oshkosh Correctional, we happen to have a wonderful warden, Judy Smith, and she really promoted the program, and she's really an excellent warden, and one that really is. We need that type of warden to be involved because she thinks it through to see how it would work, and then she implemented it, and I'm just really thankful to her for doing that.
So how did you get wardens in prisons really all over the country to share your vision? What did you think would happen if you had pet trainers working with inmates, working with dogs?
Well, I had to be like a sales lady. I had to get all my facts together. And I did a lot of it by photographs because in each prison I would take a lot of photographs that shows that the inmates were doing something positive. And then I would pass on to a new warden all this information, and I said, I think it can work. Would you be willing to try it or to give me an opportunity to speak to you?
And so why? Why would they? What facts did you give them? This program is going to do what?
I'll tell you what it is. First of all, it's good. It's a wonderful way to help rehabilitation.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some people say, oh, the inmates shouldn't have dogs because they're pets. And I said, well, they're not pets. It's more than that. It's giving the inmate an opportunity to learn how to become other-centered, as well as they get job skills. To go when they get out into the society, they have skills not only with job-connected skills, but also people skills, because a lot of volunteers come into the prison program and work with the inmates. And we need that in our institutional settings to have positive programs like this. And so I try to sell it to the warden, and if she or he isn't interested, then I'll wait until that they are replaced, and I'll do the next one.
He'll try the next. Well, the figures also of recidivism rates for people who have been through the program are so low, and the employment rates in pet-related industries are extraordinarily high, aren't they?
They're really high. I think that people buy more dog food than baby food.
Right, exactly.
And so it really is a helpful thing, but it gives them skills not only in pet care, but they do book work. And at the Washington State Correctional Center for Women, the first one I started in 81, it's still going. And the inmates answer the phone. They type letters. They do a lot of different things. And they also have a grooming program there, which is fantastic. And sometimes the humane societies bring in dogs to be groomed, and it makes them more adoptable.
Sure. Yeah. And what dogs do you use, Sister Pauline? Are they shelter dogs or?
Depends on the program.
I see.
You know, the Washington State Correctional Center for Women uses shelter dogs. Here we use purebreds usually, but we're looking for shelter dogs too that meet the criteria, because shelter dogs could have health problems and a whole lot of things could be wrong. Their hips, and because you don't have any health history on them, and we're trying to do have a success rate in the program, and we don't want dogs to fail as much. So we're trying to get dogs. We do need more dogs, more labs, more goldens, more poodles, and even mixed breeds. We went to the Bay Area Humane Society, and they're wonderful to work with us. Mm-hmm. To find the right dog. But we can't have dogs like pit bull mixes, because if you give them to a disabled person, they could be given a problem when people in the community are afraid of these dogs.
Right, I understand. And I saw a film, I'm not sure how recently this was, when you were in Argentina, you said that at that point in your life, which I don't think was that long ago, you were living pretty much by yourself in a hermitage, and
right.
Here you were living inside the prison with the dogs and the inmates, uh-huh. And you kind of liked that experience.
I do. Why? Well, because it's part of the mission. I'm, my whole focus in life is to help people, and it wouldn't help them very much if I was in a hotel. I mean, it would be nice and comfortable and have good food, but I told the Federal Penitentiary Service that I don't mind living in the prison and eating what the inmates eat, and so I could help them more with the prison program, because they paid my way to go down there, and I want to give them as much as I can for what they did for me.
Hmm. We're going to welcome phone calls for you. Sister Pauline Quinn is our guest this hour. She is a simple servant at the Dominican Order who's done something that's not so simple. She started the first prison dog trainer program in the U.S. in Washington State in 1981 with just a terrific idea, and taught herself how to train dogs. And since then, she has helped start prison dog programs all over this country and in other countries as well, like Argentina. Our phone number, we'd love to have you join us, is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is the Kathleen Dunn Show, and we're on Twitter as well, @KDunnShow. I'm interested in finding out how they select people to be in the program. Do you have to be a nonviolent offender, or violent offenders able to be in the program? She says that inmates smile more once they're involved in this and they feel they have a future. It's a heavy commitment of time, and it has been extremely successful in terms of recidivism rates, in terms of employment for the inmates once they leave the institution, and in terms of helping people, service dogs and seizure dogs. Normally they would cost $10,000 per animal to train, and using people in the prison, I'm sure the cost is much less than that. It's quite a program. So we welcome your phone calls. Join us if you would like. You are listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Sister Pauline Quinn is our guest. She started the Pathways to Hope Prison Dog Program, and it's helped so many former offenders, veterans, victims of crime with PTSD, and disabled people. It's really quite a remarkable program. We'll be welcoming phone calls for her. I do want to tell you that tomorrow at this time, the U.S. Senate was once known as the greatest deliberative body in the world. It now suffers from a reputation as a partisan, dysfunctional chamber. Tomorrow at this time, we'll speak with the author of The American Senate, An Insider's History, about what happened to the House that once forged America's greatest compromises. I'm sure some of you listening are familiar with therapy dogs, and some of you may train therapy dogs or be in that business yourself. This is a special form of that, using inmates to help to learn to train dogs. And we'd love to hear what your experience is or what you think of this program. And some of you may be familiar with the program in Wisconsin. It's at Oshkosh, and I believe it's been in Green Bay, correctional facility as well. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. Sister Pauline, do you have qualifications for inmates to be in this program? Do they have to meet a certain set of criteria? And if so, what would that be?
Well, it depends on the prison. Every prison has a different way of doing it, but most of the time they put in an application, and then the trainers and also the Department of Corrections go over who's going to applying to go into the program, and then they have an interview. So, and I don't, in some places they can have some infractions, but most of the time you can't have any infractions. You have to be working towards some positive goals in your life to be a part of the program. But I just want to clarify one thing, is that Pathways of Courage Prison Dog Program is new. I had a program, Pathways of Hope, a nonprofit, and I gave that up to a group in California. And then Pathways of Courage, it's really Bridges and Pathways of Courage is my nonprofit, and then we call the Oshkosh program Pathways of Courage, and that's for the PTSD dogs, for victims of crime, and also for veterans who have post-traumatic stress disorder. And this program is being run by Brenda Circioni, and she's an Oshkosh person there and very capable.
And tell me, Sister Pauline, I've seen it happen with therapy dogs and service dogs, but what can happen when you put a very well-trained dog with somebody who's been experiencing, for whatever reason, post-traumatic stress disorder? How does that bond help the person with the disorder?
Well, you know, I have post-traumatic stress disorder from the years of abuse that I had, and what it does is it gives the person a feeling of security. It gives them a friend to go into a public place with. Also, most people's eyes go onto the dog, so that helps a person goes in to go in public better, because their the people's focus is on the dog that they have, and so it helps them in tremendous ways of coping, of and then you these service dogs, they're not therapy dogs, but we're training service dogs, are taught specific commands to be able to help them cope with the part of the post-traumatic stress disorder that they have. Everybody's different on that.
And do most dogs get it? Is it, or do you have to weed out the dogs who are capable of learning all of that?
Well, some dogs are not programmed for this type of work, and then they are rehomed and or find another job for them. But there are always places where we can put the dogs, and we're always looking for dogs. So if your readers know of some dogs that might be helpful, and that would be good too.
Well, it would be good. So, yeah. So what do I use as a? I have all the website. Do you have one website that would be good, Sister Pauline?
Yeah, you can look on my Bridges and Pathways of Courage site, and then I can get it to Brenda, or my phone number.
Okay. Well, probably a website is better, so we'll just put that on our Facebook page.
Okay,
too.
Because on my website is my phone number.
Oh, okay.
And also, that website is being changed now.
Oh, okay. Well, let's go to some phone calls. Sabrina in Krivitz, Wisconsin. Hi, Sabrina.
Yes.
Hi.
Hi. You know, I was just calling in to say I think what a wonderful program it is, sister, that you have, you know, and I'm really think it's so great that you've gone to these prisons and you've gotten various prisons to go with the program. I think that it teaches the men compassion and responsibility, And I wonder if they really realize, do you know if the inmates, are they really impacted by, do they realize the difference they're making in the lives of the families that these dogs then go into, hopefully?
Well, they do, Sabrina, because some of the clients come back into the prison and they get to meet them and they get to see where their dog went. And they do, that's what helps their lives a lot, when they really understand what they are doing to help other people. It's wonderful, really.
And you work in many different kinds of prison. The work is done, women's prisons and men's prisons.
Right.
Yeah.
And youth. And in Argentina, they have one in the men's, women, and a youth program they're just starting.
And thank you, Sabrina, for the call. I read somewhere, Sister Pauline, that it would cost, I don't know if this would be outside the prison work, $10,000 to train a dog.
Well, you know what? Everybody has their own way of calculating how much it costs, but if people donate different things that's needed, like food and training supplies, it doesn't cost that as much. But I think the prison program really cuts it down because the inmates do this voluntary. And so that's very helpful, and it cuts the cost down quite a bit.
I'm sure.
And also, we don't charge anything for the dog.
And how long a program is it to train a dog? How long?
Well, it could be, it depends on the dog, but they have to be, even if they were trained, they have to be mentally alert to be able to handle the work. Because there's a lot of stress when you go into crowds and things like this. So I would say 18 months to 2 years sometimes. It depends. And also, the time isn't as important because the inmate also has to be the one that trains the dog, and some inmates don't do it as fast as others, but that doesn't mean that they're not good trainers. It just means that's the way that they train. And so we have to take into account the dog's mentality and how the trainer is doing and if the dog is ready to pass the test.
And it must be very hard for the inmates to part with these animals with whom they have an incredibly strong bond.
It is difficult. It is difficult. It would be for me, too. But they're doing it because this is what they want to do. They're volunteering to do a service to help other people.
Right.
And when we're helping other people, then we have to sacrifice in our own life.
Every time I see pictures of you, I don't know if it's the dogs that you're bringing to prison, I see you surrounded by dogs. You're like the St. Francis of Assisi. Are you? Do you have dogs, too, now? Or
I have three dogs. I have Pax, my big golden retriever, who was donated to me from New Horizons Service Dogs in Florida, where I had helped them start a prison program. And then I have Joey. He's a crested, Chinese crested powder puff. He's really good in his retrieving and his nose work. And then I have Nikki. He's a retired hearing dog, and he's a Papillon.
Oh. Let's go to Brian in Beaver Dam next. Hi, Brian. Our number, by the way, is 800-486-8655. Hi, Brian.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
Awesome show. I know some of the men from Ohio that have worked with the seeing eye dogs.
Oh.
And I don't know if that's part of the program, but I also know how the correctional systems move people around. And what do they do with an inmate who's been working with the dog for a while? The inmate all of a sudden gets moved to a different facility. How do they handle that with the dog?
Well, we usually have a primary trainer, a secondary trainer, and a person assigned that takes a sitter, takes care of the dogs when the other two are not able to. So then the secondary usually comes in and takes the lead role. And the Ohio program, it was probably Pilot Dogs for the Blind, or maybe Canine Companions for Independent.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You've also done, I'm wondering how this fits in, and if you use dogs in this work. I know you've done a great deal of work, Sister Pauline, with refugees, African refugees who found their way to Italy. You've done work with Bosnian refugees, people from Haiti. Tell me about that part of your life.
You know, that's really touching. The last person is Woodmay. Woodmay is in Green Bay right now. He's 19 years old. His adoption fell through, but I brought him over at 14 years old from the orphanage, which was collapsed. It was sad. It was from the earthquake. Mm-hmm. And I took him to Sacramento, California, to the burn hospital, because he had been electrocuted and he had severe mm-hmm. burns. Lost an arm, his toes, his hand was mangled, his remaining hand. So, and then I spent about 4 months out there with him, and then I went back to, brought him back to Green Bay, and he was supposed to be adopted, but it didn't work out. And so a social worker contacted me and told me about his plight, and then since that time I've been trying to help him. And he's a fantastic young man. He's only been here 5 years. He's 19. And he, let's see, he finished high school here, and he didn't know English when he came. And he got a little job, and now he is in college.
Oh.
And he's a permanent resident, but he doesn't get any kind of help whatsoever, so I'm trying to find a way to help him, too.
Hmm.
Wonderful young man. And then of the girls from El Salvador, I brought them up for medical care. They had spinal bifida, and their parents had escaped their country and were in the United States living wonderful while they were suffering, their children suffering in El Salvador. It was really horrible.
Mm. And you've done work with Bosnian refugees?
The Bosnian, yes. Well, I helped two children out of a Croatian orphanage into the United States to adoptive homes. And the Bosnians were really soldiers. The Croatians didn't have enough hospitals for the wounded when they had the Bosnian War. So the United States would help support getting them over here for medical care. And I took several of them over here and I took care of them. And then they went back home, except for one of them.
Mm-hmm.
He stayed because he was of a different, he was a Muslim working with the Croatians, and we felt that it might not be good for him to go back.
Mm-hmm. Let's go to Holly in Marinette. Hi, Holly.
Hello, Kathleen and Sister Pauline. My name is Holly, as you said, and I grew up in a very violent and abusive home, but I had a dog. I had a collie, and I credit my survival and my ability to connect with people to that dog. And now I'm a 50-something mother, and I had some health changes, and it was necessary to get a service dog. And we decided to buy a puppy and go train with him so that we'd have a really especially close bond. And, you know, something that Sister Pauline says, a dog gives you affection when you're not getting it from any other source. It gives you peace. They give you courage to go out in the world again. The world is a less frightening place when you have a confident and affectionate dog who is walking beside you. And those dogs just, they live to please. And they are so easy to train because of that. Their greatest desire is to be looking in your face and trying to anticipate what you want or need.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm enjoying all those benefits again of having a dog in my life, and I'm just so thankful that Sister Pauline and others are changing lives both canine and human. And my husband is a vet, and he's also a doctor, and so he has been trained to provide emergency care for military dogs.
Oh.
And there are military dogs that serve our country and save hundreds of lives. And I just wanted to give them that credit. And thank you. I'll take your comments off the air.
Thank you, Holly, so much.
Holly, that's wonderful, really wonderful that you had that experience with your dog, and especially that you were willing to talk to us about it, because that's really helpful to show other people what you have learned.
Mm-hmm. And I would imagine that if you have a trauma as a child, dogs are wonderful for children in so many ways, but to have a confidant, which, I mean, to people who don't have dogs, they might think it sounds absolutely ludicrous, but even for adults and for very old people and for children who can't read, and dogs can serve that purpose. You can really, may not talk back to you, but in a way they kind of listen to you, don't they?
Well, yes, they do listen to you. They don't understand, but they listen to you, probably wondering when you're going to give them a treat or something. but it's hard for people to understand unless they can develop a close bond with the dog, because they just say, well, a dog, well, how can they help? But you should see how many people are converting to their ways of thinking on this. And to see, I mean, even Judy Smith, the warden at Oshkosh Correctional, has seen a tremendous difference in some of the inmates with the dogs. And it's hard to really know how that can help you until you're involved in it.
And tell me more about that. How have the inmates changed, Sister Pauline?
Well, how they change is that they're more helpful to one another. The inmates are now going out and training some of the classes because they've been there long enough to be able to learn how to be good trainers. And, of course, Brenda Circioni is there watching to make sure and to ask questions, to answer questions. But and to see them, they're smiling and they're talking and they seem happier. They are given assignments so they can be participating in this as a group or individually, so they can do projects that we need to have done to make it a better program. So all these little interactions like that help build their self-esteem too, because, you know, because they committed a crime doesn't mean that they're not sorry for it. And so they need to have hope and courage to be able to leave the institution and go out and become a productive citizen. And so, and we've seen that changes with the dogs.
Mm-hmm.
The dogs help break down barriers, because you have to get on their level and talk a different, you know, a talk you can't just, you have to, you know how you dog talk.
I know. Yes, I know it.
I didn't want to do it on air, but, you know, dog talk.
Yes.
And so, I mean, they do the dog talk. I mean, before that, nobody would be doing dog talk. Are you kidding me?
Thank you, Holly, very much for the call. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. Joan in Shorewood, hi.
I just want to say thank you for the work you're doing, and it reminds me of about 11 years ago when my husband was in hospice. I took our Alaskan sled dog over every day, and it was so good with patients that I took it to a woman's bed. She put the dog, she hadn't opened her eyes for days. I put the dog down. Her daughter put her hand on the dog. She pet the dog. She opened her eyes, smiled, and then passed away.
Mm-hmm.
But the power, but do you ever need volunteers? My daughter suffers from post-traumatic stress disorder. And some years ago, they discovered that she had the kind of cancer that runs through the body. And Mayo Clinic allowed her to keep a dog. through that whole horrible ordeal because it helped heal, and the dog stayed with her, and she finally found a home for it out in Colorado. But do you need any volunteers to help train the dogs?
Well, it is a inmate training program, so it's the inmates that's training the dogs. They do need volunteers out in the community, but it's usually around the Oshkosh area or in the immediate area of what another prison that has a program. So they can, because it's sometimes it's just day outings with the dogs, and they have to go through a school program so to learn how to handle the dog out in the public. And so in order to really learn these steps, they have to be near the institution to be able to get the training.
Are you doing a program in Green Bay, too, Sister?
No. What I do in Green Bay is I go in there quarterly with my dogs and see the inmates in the it's a more secluded part of the prison. They don't go out in the main population, but I do go there. It was more than quarterly. Now it's down to quarterly that I go there with these dogs. And I did start a program at Sanger B. Powers years ago.
More phone calls in a moment. Joan, thank you very much for your call, our number. And we're speaking this hour with Sister Pauline Quinn. She, in 1981, started the first prison dog trainer program in the United States in Washington State. And now they are all over this country and other countries as well. And we're welcoming phone calls for her. Our phone number is 800-486-8655, 800-486-8655. The email is talk@wpr.org. Our Facebook page, where we will have more information about Sister Pauline Quinn and the work that she's doing in the organizations she's with now, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Back to phone calls for Sister Pauline Quinn. Jane in Land O'Lakes is next. Hello, Jane.
Hi.
Hi.
I just had a comment. When you're talking about these dogs, I have an old golden retriever. And a couple of years ago, I took her into a Lutheran daycare center. And we would just walk around and talk to the people and let them pet her. And I walked over to this one woman who was sitting in a chair. And she petted the dog, and then she said, "Oh, what a nice doggie," or something like that. And I didn't think much of it. And one of the attendants came over to me about a minute later and said, "Did she just say something?" Mm-hmm. And I said, "Yeah." She said, "What a nice doggie." And she said, "She has not talked for a year and a half."
Oh, my gosh.
Now, this is
I know.
Hmm. Boy, thank you so much for telling us that story. It's wonderful.
Why do you think that happens, Sister Pauline Quinn?
Why do I think it happens?
Uh-huh.
Well, I can't answer that scientifically. I just think that the dog's unconditional love is just something that people remember. And because they're soft and loving and non-threatening, perhaps that's a reason why they would be able to talk to them.
Thank you, Jane, so much for that memory. Mary in Rockford, hi.
Hello.
Hi, Mary.
Yes, I thought that the gentleman took my question and was going to ask it to you.
We want to talk to you.
Oh, great. My husband's a combat, and he currently is taking our little Chihuahua mix to vet school. To become a service dog.
Oh.
And we hopefully are going to be relocating up to Sun Prairie, Wisconsin. But every time we call apartments, they say there's either $200 deposit or they'll say there'll be a monthly $25 fee for the dog. And then my husband is just wondering, given he's disabled, my husband's disabled, what does the American Liberty Disabilities Act, how does that play into these apartments charging fees for a pet, you know, for a service dog?
Hmm.
You know, Mary, a service dog is a dog that is trained to do specific tasks to help people. They retrieving or turn lights on and off, and they also have to pass a public access test to make sure that they are good in public around other dogs, children. And this is really important, Mary, because there are so many dogs that are going out there that are really not service dogs that are causing problems for the people who really need the dog.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why they have a test that they have to pass this test in order to be considered a service dog.
And as far as people having buildings that maybe they don't want dogs in, I don't know if there's much you can do about that. If you're in need of a dog as a service dog, I would think that the Americans with Disabilities Act might cover that, Sister Pauline, but I'm walking on territory.
They do cover service dogs, but they really the dog really has to be mm-hmm. not a therapy dog. They don't cover therapy dogs.
Right.
Only service dogs that have the training that is needed to pass the test.
Right.
There is people can get a letter from a doctor saying that they need emotional support dog, and sometimes if they can get this letter, that they can get into an apartment with this letter from a doctor saying that this person needs this dog.
Mm-hmm.
So I would go to a doctor and get a letter and to see if that will help.
Yeah, that's it.
But they wouldn't have public access, though, in the stores. And it really is important to be able to legitimize this by having the tests and taking the dogs in public and passing these tests.
Right.
It's fair, and having the training behind it takes a long time to train the dogs.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Mary, very much for your call. Lawrence in Milwaukee. Hi, Lawrence.
Hi.
Hi.
This comment is for Ms. Quinn. I have a god brother who's actually involved in the dog program in the prison.
Oh.
And he just gave me a call and asked me to relay a message to Ms. Quinn. They all in there who are involved in the program really appreciate what you're doing, and it helps the community, but it's also a morale booster for the guys who are involved in there. And they just want to personally thank you. You know, I have to relay the message, but obviously they want to personally.
Which leader dog program are they in?
I'm not exactly sure.
Where is he located?
He's in Oshkosh Correctional in Oshkosh, Wisconsin.
Hmm. Okay, well, if he's in the Oshkosh program and they're doing Occupaws dogs.
Right.
And I started that program for Occupaws, and this is a wonderful program where the inmates are training guide dogs for the blind.
Oh.
And that's at the same prison that we're in using the same inmates. I started that one for the Occupaws program, and this is one we're doing, the Pathways of Courage program. They're both separate, but we utilize the same inmates. And the Occupaws program is doing wonderful.
Hmm. Thank you, Lawrence. Well, it's nice to hear from people who are saying thank you.
For
what's happening in their lives as a result of this. Sister Pauline Quinn, isn't it amazing when initially what it took was somebody to say yes to you all those years ago, and you know, you had to have your facts and figures, but this was a big thing to start a program like this in the first prison, and somebody just believed in you.
They did believe in me, because I'll tell you, Dr. Busted believed in me because he was a prisoner of war.
Oh.
And he suffered during World War II in Europe, and he understood my life, so he believed in me, and that's what the inmates need. They need people to believe in them, that they can go out and make a difference in this world,
mm-hmm.
that they don't have to be in prison all their life. They can change their hearts, but it takes a lot to change, because who knows what they went through in their life.
You know? Right, yeah. Well, thank you ever so much for being with us. It was a pleasure
to
meet you.
You're welcome, Kathleen. I really appreciate the opportunity.
And thanks for all you're doing. Sister Pauline Quinn, simple servant at the Dominican Order, started the first prison dog trainer program in the U.S. in Washington State, and she's done remarkable work with refugees and dogs and prisoners and disabled people all over the world. Thanks to K.P. Whaley for producing this show. And thanks to Cookie Anderson for letting us know about Sister Pauline Quinn. If you would like more information about all the work that she's doing, go to our Facebook page. It's the best place to go, and there will be a link that will take you to her and her work in prisons. And that is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Thanks to KP as well for on-air production here in our studios in downtown Milwaukee. We have news coming up from National Public Radio, and we'll be with you again tomorrow.